What's up, everyone? It's Roger and James here, Fern, that is Kingdom Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking about Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opening up at Walt Disney's Hollywood Studios and at Disneyland this year. We're also going to be talking about Fox and kind of keeping the brand around after the merger. And we're also going to be talking about our thoughts on the Captain Marvel movie. So let's jump first into the big story, really. It was a bit of a quiet week because there was a annual shareholders meeting, and so because of that, everything kind of was being held back for that, even though there wasn't a huge amount mentioned in this one. But the big news of the week really was Disney confirming that they're going to be opening up their new Galaxy's Edge area at Walt Disney World's Hollywood Studios and Disneyland. So to give you the dates, so California is opening up on May 31st. And then it's opening up in Hollywood Studios on August 29th. Now, the interesting thing with this is they're going to be like staged launches where they're opening them up, but they're only going to have one attraction, the Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run, with phase two opening later this year, which is Rise of the Resistance. So, yeah, that was a bit, I don't think anyone was expecting it to be quite as early.
No, and that's what they say, that's why it's phased. They wanted it to come out earlier, be available for people to go through it and so on. And obviously the hype for it has been huge. So on that level, I can understand it. You know, they want it open as soon as possible. It certainly is to their advantage to have it as open as soon as possible. And while it's not the greatest for consumers, for people visiting the parks, because it means if you go in that opening phase, you're not going to get, you know, the proper full experience. It is what Disney wants. I mean, whether or not it's on purpose, they want you to go, oh, we want to be there at opening and do the Millennium Falcon, but we also want to be there when the Rise of the Resistance starts, whenever that is. So as a consumer, I'm kind of annoyed by that. Keeping in mind, I won't be there until well after phase two has come and gone. So it doesn't actually directly impact me, but I am still annoyed by it because, you know, you want to have the whole experience. And but
the only counter argument to that would be, had they originally planned on opening it, say in Disneyland, 2-3 months later when Rise of Resistance was ready, that means that anyone that's going in like June and July that probably wouldn't have seen it before now get to see it. I know when I was at Disneyland Paris, I missed the opening of the Ratatouille area by like a week, and I peeked through the window and you could see it was all done, you know, but it was that last few tests and stuff. And it was that thing of, so I had to wait years before I went back to see it, but I was, you know, you could see it through the window. So you could look at it the other way of maybe it wasn't quite going to be, it's a bonus time rather than the idea that you're missing something. I do think the way they're staging it, in some ways will help to keep spread it out, because then they'll have a second beat with Rise of the Resistance opening later this year. This whole thing of only opening a themed area with one main ride, they've done that a lot of times. You know, Ratatouille, they built a whole area around one ride. So, and like Pandora, let's be honest, there's only one ride. The other one doesn't really count.
It's one and a half rides. No, I don't have any issue with them opening an area that's only got a single one, because especially when you're looking at the promo material, the drone shots from above the area and whatnot, the ride is only a part of this area. You know, the area itself is very much an experience. It seems like it's going to be comparable, if not superior, to Diagon Alley over at Universal Studios, where there are now 3 Harry Potter rides plus 1 in production, but it's replacing another one or something like that.
Yeah.
There's 3 or 4 rides over there, but it launched with less than that. But simply going and being in Diagon Alley, or in this case being in Galaxy's Edge, is itself a major part of the experience. So if we were talking about Toy Story Land, you know, and they opened with 2 rides over there, but I wouldn't consider the area an experience. I've been there once. It's a very small area. There's some meet and greets. There's theming, but there's really nothing to do other than the rides and maybe get some food or go to the shop or something. Like Galaxy's Edge, at least if it lives up to the hype, there'll be stuff going on. There'll be things you can interact with. You can have that little custom R2 droid, or, you know, that you can build and it'll interact with parts of the park and stuff like that. So if it lives up to the hype, simply going to Galaxy's Edge should be a major part of the experience. Now, obviously, everyone wants to do the Millennium Falcon, but, you know, that's going to be a taller order.
Yeah. I mean, luckily, one of my family members, they're going out in, like, I think September, October. We were a bit iffy whether or not they were actually going to get to see it, because they were, oh, yeah, we're going to see Star Wars on the ground. In Walt Disney World, on the ground. And they said fall, you might. I was kind of like tempering their expectations. I said, well, it might not be open. But yeah, it looks like they might only be there a few weeks after. So they'll probably walk right through it and that'll be it. But it's just this kind of thing of, I think it's good that they're doing it. I think it's definitely going to give Hollywood Studios a massive boost this year. I mean, they're all the different hotels that they're bringing in. You know, they're expecting this to be a big push. It's got mainstream attention. You know, when this announcement went out, all the big sites were covering it. You know, I saw it on IGN, I saw it on Variety. You know, this kind of news doesn't get on, Disney Park news doesn't get on to the big mainstream media very rare, very often. And yeah, this one hit it.
Yeah. I mean, Star Wars is still big news. It might not have had as much positive press in the last, let's say, year and a half, give or take, ever since The Last Jedi, which, you know, we've talked plenty about. And while most people liked Solo, you know, it didn't make a very big impact in terms of, like, people going, oh, yeah, you did. I can't wait to see the sequel to Solo. I think most people have even forgotten that Solo came out last year. But it's still the Star Wars brand, and it's still got that name recognition. And this is a pretty big thing. This is an entire section of Hollywood Studios, an entire section of Disneyland where you can be in Star Wars, where there will be resistance fighters. There will be First Order stormtroopers. There'll be characters, you know, from the extended media. There's characters that you'll know from the regular media, and it won't just be, you know, the March of the First Order that happens 17 times a day down at Hollywood Studios currently.
It's still actually cool. Like, the first time I saw that.
I still love it, but it is the same thing over and over again. It's split between that and Galaxy of Stories, I think it's called. Yeah. You know, they alternate them, but this should be different. It shouldn't be the same show or the same experience each time you do it. It might, they'll obviously going to keep it fairly static, but there should be a certain amount of randomness to it once they start adding in the Rise of the Resistance stuff.
Yeah, and hopefully they move that kind of thing back, and they've got, like, I'm sure they're going to be adding to this area constantly. I especially think over at Hollywood Studios, I think that area is, because there's also not only if you've got Rise of the Resistance, there's a third ride as well in production as well. So, you know, there's going to be tiered ways of opening this one. And that's maybe not a bad thing, because in some ways they keep getting that money going. Bob Iger obviously decided that he just needed to send out the tweet saying it's nearly ready to open, rather than spending all that money on advertising. I'll be honest, I mean, I know they're going to advertise it, but you always feel like maybe advertise it, just include it in your advert, because it's not good. I think it's going to be heaving there this summer.
I am glad I'm not actually going to go and see it this summer. I would like to, but I there's no way. I'll be in Disneyland in around Christmas time. So that's when I'll get to experience it. And I don't know how it'll be different between Disneyland and Hollywood Studios, but that'll be my introduction to it.
Yeah. So yeah, it's looking good. Should be lots of interesting bits coming out of there. Kind of really all the other bits and pieces that came out of that press release were very much what we'd seen before, with like the merchandise and, you know, the food and all the rest of it. So yeah, looking great. Okay. So let's move on to our next topic. Also during that annual shareholders meeting, Bob Iger was talking about the Fox deal, which is supposed to, a lot of people are talking about this week being the big week that's going to finish and finalize. There was talk last week, but as of today, on the Monday, the 11th of March, apparently the Mexican government or certain distinction are going to be making their ruling on it. And because Fox have, well, Disney have said that they will sell Fox Sports to please them in Mexico, and what that means is they will probably get the go ahead today, because I think it's already a pretty much done deal. They're expecting it to be done very, very soon. Even at the annual shareholders meeting, they showed off a scissor reel of, or a sizzle reel of, yeah, of all the Fox movies. They were talking about Avatar. This thing's pretty much, I think, going to be done this week. You know, they don't start sort of showing off things like this and things about Avatar at these annual shareholders if they're not confident. Though I was listening to the audio version, and of course we just got classic Disney music instead, so it reminded me, I sort of sat there going, why am I listening to this? I can just fast forward. It just reminded me of being back in the park, but love listening to those annual shareholders and conference calls.
Yeah, I mean, the shareholder calls are always going to be a little bit different depending on what perspective you're coming from, because a lot of the shareholders don't pay attention to a lot of the day-to-day. Yeah. They only care profits versus expenses, net gross, et cetera. You know, all the stuff that shareholders worry about. So Disney needs to include all this stuff. And then they need to remind you that it's Disney. So they include the old classic songs that you've heard 30 bajillion times, but still like.
And yeah, you still sit there listening to it going, why am I listening to this? I go, what's the listen to the proper version?
And then you finish listening to it anyway instead of changing.
Yeah. So they did say an interesting thing. Bob Iger said that within the business, within the company, there will still have the Fox name on them, particularly on the movie side. We will continue to make movies under the Fox brand and the Fox Searchlight brand, and FX will keep its name too, which I thought was kind of interesting because I wasn't too sure what was going to happen with all of this. I wasn't sure if they want to rebrand 21st Century Fox, if they were going to just discontinue it. I didn't even know if they were going to have to create a brand new brand because they didn't want any cross-reference with Fox Sports and Fox News and all, and the Fox. But maybe if they push the 21st Century Fox side of things, it might. But it also gives them a great way of building a brand and keeping everything within that brand. And when you see Marvel, Star Wars, it, you know, rather than having Simpsons and Avatar, it kind of put everything under this brand. And I still think there's going to be some reshuffling of some of the brands like Simpsons, and maybe, I mean, we know Avatar is being shifted to Disney. That's going over, and National Geographic's its own brand. But what is kind of interesting that they are keeping that Fox name. I mean, how long they're going to do that? It could be a 3-year thing, 5-year thing. In 10 years' time, it's completely gone. But yeah, I was expecting a full rebrand.
And I actually wasn't. I was kind of expecting them to keep the Fox name pretty much for the reasons you mentioned. They want to keep Marvel, Star Wars, Disney as the trio of pillars, and then kind of leverage the fact that Fox is off on its own. At the bottom of the screen, it'll say a Disney company or something like that, the way Universal says a Comcast company at the bottom of its screen. But yeah, leave Fox by itself. And, you know, remember that the public doesn't really pay attention to this stuff. Yeah, right now it's in the news. People are like, Disney's buying Fox. A couple years from now, a lot of people will have forgotten that Disney owns Fox, and that lets them do things with the Fox branding that they couldn't do with Disney. We've talked about this plenty in the past. This is where they can stick a lot of the R-rated movies. This is where they can stick the artsy independent movies, stuff that just, when you look at it, you're like, that's not a Disney concept.
I think it's going to be that thing of going back to the days of Touchstone. I think when they made that decision to kind of go step away from those kind of movies and go fully into the family stuff, you almost feel like the thing of like, oh, we are missing this big chunk of entertainment. And I think 21st Century Fox is going to be a big aspect of Hulu. I see that as going to be the big key point for pushing for that. But then I also wonder if things like Alita and The Kid That Was the King, they can still kind of use that in both ways. You know, if there may be a bit of Disney, they can push it through their channels as well in the same way. But that 21st Century Fox logo at the beginning will just give them that edge of going, yeah, but this isn't full Disney mode.
Yeah. And having that divide is useful to them. So,
yeah. And I mean, I fully expect them to shift some of the bits and pieces around. I mean, you got things like Alita and the Kid That Would Be King and all this kind of stuff. They can utilize that and push that through their Disney channels and then push it out and go, oh, well, there's, you know, this new family movie or something like that from them. But at the same time, I don't know. I don't know whether or not they will just end up shifting them over to those kind of projects over to the Disney branding because it will fit better. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see. I thought it was good, the fact that, I mean, FX was the one brand I thought, well, they could keep that one because it's less like Fox in some respects. But I was wondering if they want to try and move away, but doesn't look like it.
Well,
and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, and I would say, even if they did rebrand the rest of Fox and kept FX, FX has become one of those channels, at least in the States, where you can swear and you can do ultra violence with like Fargo. Fargo's a great series. I think FX also had Legion over here, the X-Men TV show. And yeah, it lets them have that outlet. And yeah, there's just a lot they can do with Fox or FX or 20th Century Fox, 21st Century Fox, or, you know, all of this stuff. And I think them leaving it as its own thing, at least for a while. I'm hoping that it lasts for a while. Eventually, they're going to go to the shareholders and go, why do we have two different companies? Let's just shuffle everything in. Yeah. But I kind of hope that they leave Fox as Fox for quite some time.
Yeah, I'm definitely up for the idea that they have a branding that they can use for putting movies and stuff under, you know. And it's just an interesting fact. But I'm sure they're going to be reshuffling the things around, and going to be interesting to see how they push all of that forward. But hopefully in the next week or so, we will get confirmation, and then it'll become a bit clearer, and then, you know, you'll see them start, because it might take months and years. They definitely seem to be shifting up the movie and the TV side. That seems to be definitely pushing up. You know, and we talk about that quite a bit with the Disney Plus podcast. But on that note, I'm going to introduce here our discussion from the Disney Plus podcast that we did this week about our thoughts on Captain Marvel. And we went to see it this past weekend. We're not going to be doing any spoilers, but I know this movie is going to be coming out to Disney Plus later this year. I am convinced that this is going to be a launch title. That's my personal feeling.
I mean, it would be about the right timing. It would, if the projections of when Disney Plus are supposed to come out, this movie should probably have already been released on physical media before then, if not by very much, but at least a little bit, so Disney's not too worried about it cannibalizing sales. Yeah. And this would be a nice thing for them to have on the sale as a pitch line. See our second most recent Marvel movie, because Avengers Endgame will have come out by then. Spider-Man will probably have come out by then too. So our third most recent. But
I think as well, throwing Dumbo in with the same thing as well to kind of offer that kind of aspect. So Captain Marvel this past weekend, I was very pleasantly surprised when I went to the cinema, because the cinema I go to has lowered all of its prices to $4.99. for every single movie, for every single day. It's almost like there's a battle going on against something that they're having to try and get people in. So I was pleasantly surprised, and I'll be honest, that decision alone is probably going to make me go see movies a little bit more regularly than I normally do, because it's basically half price. But yeah, Captain Marvel, theater was packed Saturday night. I don't normally do that thing, but I really enjoyed it. It's a solid, great movie from start to finish. I enjoyed it. I loved all the 90s references, loved the action, because I had a few issues with because I've read one of the comics recently, it kind of threw something off a little bit for me. But generally, I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I wouldn't say it was my top tier Marvel movies, but yeah, I just really enjoyed it. And I kind of came out, I was like, yeah, that was good. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I'm basically in the same camp. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's not one of the top tier, but it's a solid mid-tier Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. And it hit the buttons it needed to. It got the character set up for Endgame. The storytelling was acceptable. It was fine. It did what it needed to do. It tossed in some humor. It tossed in some action. You kind of have to gloss over a couple bits. I like how they did her origin. It's changed from the comics, but for the better, as is normally the case for the Marvel movies. And yeah, it was just, Brie Larson was very good in the role. It was great to see Sam Jackson, even if there was kind of an uncanny valley thing going on with the de-aging process. And it was great to see Phil Coulson in the back in the movies, even if it is prequel, sort of.
Yeah, I thought that was a good thing of having him in there, kind of helps interconnecting a little bit with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because that kind of got lost. I think since Avengers, the original movie, kind of it got forgotten more and more. So it was nice to see him put in there. But this almost felt a little bit like a Nick Fury movie. He was in this a lot more. I think because we're so used to seeing him as a bonus, like he turns up for a couple of scenes. It felt like almost a Nick Fury origin story as well.
I would agree that there are parts to it that are Nick origin. Like we learn how he got his eye patch. Mm. We see him as a very low level S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, still figuring out what he's going to do. But I've seen that said a lot, that this is like a 50-50 Captain Marvel, Nick Fury movie. I don't really agree with that. His actual impact on the movie is fairly minimal. He's more of a background character who just gets a decent amount of screen time.
He's definitely the sidekick of the thing. And I wasn't expecting him to be in it as much as he was. So I did enjoy that aspect of it. And the way they interconnected it all with the larger MCU, with the object that I'm not going to call that is, but just in general, you know, with characters like Ronan in there, with Nick Fury, you know, the fact that you had the Krieger, I didn't know the character's name, but I just remember from Guardians of the Galaxy, where it just goes,
ooh. The Collector.
Collector. That's not the Collector.
No, sorry.
Yeah.
Either way.
Korra. Just the kind of the integration into bringing in aspects of Guardians of the Galaxy and Avengers and bringing that all in, it kind of helped interconnect it all. And instantly it's just part of the MCU now because of the way it's all integrated. And yeah, I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie. Like you said, you know, it's that kind of thing. Like for me, like Ant-Man and the Wasp, those kind of things where what I would call it just a traditional movie, you sit down, you watch it. If you've never watched the other ones, you could watch this one and not really know. You would miss a few things, but yeah, great. I can't really, you know, not every superhero movie has to be like Endgame or, you know, like Infinity War, you know, and yeah, it's a solid superhero movie.
I definitely enjoyed it. I will probably see it again in theaters, although I will wait towards closer to the end of the run so there are less people in there. But yeah, I've got small complaints, but nothing major. It got me pumped up for Avengers Endgame. Yeah, especially no spoilers. They do show what looks like a clip that's lifted directly from Endgame as one of the two post-credit sequences. So.
But they've done that in previous movies.
Yeah, so they did it.
We did it. We saw it with Doctor Strange. We saw it, I think, with
Ant-Man, the first Ant-Man.
Yeah. So we have seen that kind of thing before, where they kind of put the clips in. They kind of twist them around in the real movie anyway, so it doesn't quite add up. But no, just generally, was just really liked it, and I thought it was the one thing that did get me was how almost superpowered she became at the end. You know, you were talking that kind of Superman feel to her by the time she finished. And just her seeing her with the ships and in battle, you're like, whoa, you know, she is so much more superpowered than as she learned how to control her powers. Yeah, and that's going to be a big aspect for taking on Thanos, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. And obviously the real worry is that in Endgame, she'll be a bit of a deus ex machina device where she just kind of comes in and smacks Thanos around and like, oh, well, that was easy. Marvel has very specifically said that is not the case.
Yeah.
But I still will have to see it to believe that that Endgame isn't just Captain Marvel beats up Thanos while everyone else goes off and hunts a MacGuffin or something like that. So
yeah, it's gonna be. I think as well as with having her in there and then having Endgame so close, you know, it's definitely gonna be that time where she becomes a major part. And I don't think that's a bad thing because I think the character's interesting, and also they opens them wide open for many more movies of where they left it. But yeah, just really good. So hopefully this IMAX during the shareholder meeting, you know, the Bob Iger has said that all these movies are going to be on Disney Plus within the first year of their launch, which is a bit vague. But yeah, this is going to be a big aspect for bringing forward Disney Plus. So hopefully that will be on there very, very soon. Thank you very much for watching, guys. Make sure you go check us out over at DizKingdom.com. I'm James. Where can they find you?
You can find me at HeroicLegacy.com.
Make sure you go and subscribe on the different audio versions and the YouTube version. Also, just want to make it a quick little plug, really, for our Patreon. As of yet, the sort of YouTube is not really pulling in as much to cover the audio version as much as it used to. But we have got so many listeners on the audio versions compared to the video ones. They're literally like 10-1 ratio at the minute, if not 20-1. So if you are listening and would like to help chip in just to help fund the thing, literally $1 a month, that's all we kind of, that would be great. You know, if we could get 10 listeners to do that in a month, then we would pretty much cover most of the costs, but it just helps. So if you are willing to do that, go check us out over at patreon.com/DizKingdom. On that note, guys, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back soon. Laters.
Later.